Blog Talk Radio. This service is provided in high definition by free conference call. Access code accepted. There are 26 participants in this conference. This conference is being recorded.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Michael Badnarik. And I'm here with several other members of FAN. FAN is an acronym for Free America Now, an organization intended to help other liberty groups do whatever it is they do. We help them do it better. Our first project was helping Sheriff Richard Mack organize his Constitutional Sheriff Convention in Las Vegas. There have been three of those conventions so far, and the purpose of these conventions is to gather county sheriffs from across the country and give them a solid understanding of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, because as far as Sheriff Mack and many of us are concerned, the county sheriff may be the last line of defense in this fight for freedom. We have a particular purpose for this call tonight. The purpose is to support the sheriff from Liberty County, Florida. That is upholding the Constitution, defending people's life, liberty, and property, and the sheriff from Liberty County now finds himself a little bit crossways with some of the rest of the Florida government. His name is Nick Finch.
Yes, Michael, you're breaking up, and it's hard to hear you.
But it's going to be up to Sheriff Finch about his situation. Is he wants? Hello.
I'm here. You are breaking up a little bit though.
Okay. So anyway, what I'm going to do now is turn it over to Sheriff Finch. Welcome, Sheriff. The bottom line purpose of this is to support you in any way that we can. Why don't you begin by telling us who you are, what your circumstances are now in Florida, and what you think we might be able to do to help.
Well, I'm Sheriff Nick Finch from Liberty County, Florida. Last week I was arrested by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for official misconduct after I refused to file charges against a gentleman that one of my deputies arrested for carrying a concealed firearm. That decision was made based on my belief in the Second Amendment, and I made it known that evening. And now I find myself crossways with
Sheriff, could you speak a little louder, please?
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
right now, there's a rally tomorrow in Tallahassee that I will be speaking at. I've got a prepared statement. Obviously, I have an attorney right now defending me on the criminal charges. Obviously, I can't talk a whole lot about the criminal case against me at this point since it is ongoing. But I can tell you that I believe the charges against me are wrong. I swore an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and I believe that I faithfully upheld my commitment to that oath. Again, since I've done that, I have found myself crossways with the state of Florida, been charged with a third-degree felony for official misconduct, and I do have an attorney, Jimmy Judkins out of Tallahassee, and just met with him today. I guess the biggest way that y'all can help right now is to, you know, send emails to the governor's office, send emails to the state attorney's office in support of what I've done, uphold my oath to the Constitution. And there's also, now, you know, I'm a small county sheriff. I'm a man of few means. I don't live in the Taj Mahal. I live in a manufactured home sitting on 3 acres of land, and I don't, you know, I'm not a wealthy man, and my defense is going to cost some money. So we have set up a legal defense fund, and I would be happy to share that information here if that's what you feel is appropriate.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, please do that. Okay, anybody that wants to contribute to my legal defense fund should make the checks payable to Nick Finch Legal Defense Fund. And the address that you would send that to is 327 Office Plaza, Tallahassee, Florida, 32301. Now we have gone through a firm. I've lost my what they call it. Accounting. This is actually an accounting firm that has set this account. What we want to do is make sure that we don't violate any provisions of other state law by accepting monies. And there's some provisions here that. Obviously, you can't donate if you do business with the sheriff's office. I don't suspect anybody listening to this phone call would fall into any of those categories, but there are a couple categories to keep me out of trouble with the Ethics Commission. Let me see if I can pull this up here real quick while I'm... give me just a second, that's coming up. Okay. Here are people that cannot donate to my defense fund. A registered lobbyist, a lobbying firm, or an employer of a lobbyist for the Liberty County Sheriff's Office. Well, I can tell you, the Liberty County Sheriff's Office has no lobbyists, so that doesn't apply to anybody. An officer or an employee of the Liberty County Sheriff's Office, or a spouse or a dependent thereof, which I'm sure that there's nobody on the line listening right now that meets that criteria. A political committee of continuous existence or electioneering communications organization, and I'll be honest with him, I'll have to leave that to the legal scholars. I have no idea what that means. And any vendor of Liberty County Sheriff's Office or any foreign national. Those are what I have been told by the accounting firm that will keep me out of trouble with the Florida Ethics Commission. So, what else can I tell you?
Why don't you give us the address again, just in case people didn't get it completely the first time?
Okay, the address is going to be Nick Finch Legal Defense Fund, 327 Office Plaza, Tallahassee, Florida, 32301.
And that firm's phone number is 850-878-2453. If anybody has any questions that I can't answer for you tonight about it. Now, do you know very much about the rally tomorrow? It's going to be in Tallahassee in front of the state capitol?
Yes, sir. It's going to be in Tallahassee in front of the state capitol. I've been told that Chris Ann Hall, she's a constitutional attorney. I've been told that her husband is going to speak there. I'm not sure. I want to think that, and I may be mistaken, but I want to think that Sheriff Mack may be there. And maybe I'm thinking wrong, but I was thinking maybe I heard he was going to be there, but I don't quote me on that. There's going to be Mr. Wiley, who is the Florida candidate for governor for the Libertarian Party, is going to be there. So there's going to be several speakers there, to my knowledge, and I'm going to be there as well. And I've got a prepared statement that from my attorney that I intend to read at the rally tomorrow.
Do you have that speech handy?
I do.
You have it nearby?
Oh,
why don't you go ahead and, because most of the people on this call, I suspect, won't be able to attend the rally. But
okay.
I'm hoping that everybody who is listening will make a personal phone call. I mean, we can send an email, but, you know, email tend to get, you know, pile up in an inbox and not get read. I often get email after the fact. I would have been happy to, you know, comply with the request, but I didn't see it in time. So if you have friends in Florida, please give them a phone call, talk to them voice to voice, and ask them to go to Tallahassee. Am I correct, Sheriff, it starts at 11 a.m. Eastern time?
11 a.m. Eastern time in front of the old Capitol. Yes.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and read the speech that you're going to give for those of us who can't be there to in person.
Well, when I approach the podium, I'm going to raise my right hand, and I'm going to say this. I, Nicholas Lee Finch, do solemnly swear that I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution and the government of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. After that, I expect some applause, and then I'm going to say, I took this oath for the first time as a 19-year-old boy who had just entered the United States military. And on January 1st, at 1 minute after midnight, I took that oath again as I was sworn in as the duly elected sheriff of Liberty County, Florida. In 1990, I believed so much in my oath that I went to war to defend this country, where I served in the Kuwait Theater of Operations during Operation Desert Storm. I believed in that oath then, and I believe in that oath now, and I will continue to defend that oath until I take my last breath. I believe the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land, and that it is true. And that is true in Alaska, California, Kansas, and yes, in Liberty County, Florida as well. My attorney has handcuffed me on what I can say today, but I want all of you to know how much my family and I appreciate the outpouring of support we have received from all across this great country we call the United States of America. Despite the unjustness of the situation, I remain committed to the rule of law, to our system of justice, and to the law enforcement community, and I am confident that the truth will prevail. I want to thank you all for coming out today. I'm so grateful for your support, and I'm completely humbled that so many of you care enough about the Constitution and our country to come out and share your support. Thank you all again. Your support fills my heart with joy and hope for our country. God bless you all, and God bless the United States of America. That will be my statement for tomorrow.
That's wonderful. I think that's going to be very well received. Now, I mean, tell the listeners on the call a little bit about Liberty County. I think that it's incredibly convenient that the county is called Liberty County. It's almost like a Shakespeare play they're doing here. but it's not a very big county. It, I understand there's like 3,000 people in the county.
Liberty County is landmass-wise one of the largest counties in the state of Florida. Population-wise, the smallest population-wise in the state of Florida. Liberty County consists of about 8,300 people. There's typically 4,000 registered voters in all categories, and typically about 3,300 usually show up to vote. So it's a small county. It's a close-knit community. It's a logging county. Liberty County has made their, you know, made their money for years in the logwoods. I mean, it's nothing but pine trees, and that's about all you're going to find down here. Pine trees. So it's close knit. It's a small community. Everybody knows everybody, and it's really a wonderful place to live and raise a family, quite honestly.
So I'm guessing that your attorney won't allow you to discuss the sequence of events that led to this. Is there anything that you can tell us about the circumstances without jeopardizing the case?
I wouldn't want to stretch it. I want to keep my attorney happy. He's the one that's going to keep me out of trouble, and you know, he has kind of advised me just to any of the details of the case for now.
I hate not to, but
I would really love to tell my side, but I've got to listen to him because I don't want to lose him as my attorney. So,
well, we don't want to. What we want is success, and you know, we are all here to support you, and you know, we don't want to do anything that might jeopardize you know, your circumstances. So, you know, at this point in time, we want to, you know, give you our moral support to let you know that, you know, we are behind you. Again, I want everybody that's on the conference call to, you know, make some phone calls. The rally in Tallahassee is, you know, just before lunch tomorrow in Florida. There's going to be a radio program in Pensacola. They're going to talk about that on the air and try to rally the people. What we would like to do is have a show of support. We want to have as many warm bodies there as possible. That's the one thing that we can do at this particular moment. You know, contributing money is, you know, kind of a longer-term thing. Any checks and money that you can contribute over the next couple of weeks. Sheriff, your first arraignment is July 10th?
July 10th. Yes, sir.
Does your attorney have any estimate as to when this will start going to trial?
His best guess is around September is what he told me today. I met with him today. And his best guess would be September would be the first time we'd actually be in front of a judge. So
we have really a lot of time to gather money, to get the word out, and to even create a number of additional support rallies between now and then. And maybe if we can spread the word far enough, you know, we can have supporters in the courtroom there in Liberty County.
Very good, very good.
That, at least that would be my hope and desire.
Yeah, I would love I would love to have the courthouse grounds full of people out there in support.
Yeah.
Again, you know, that's I understand that people have lives of their own, and I appreciate so much the support. I have had calls from all over the United States of America, emails, Facebook messages, and it's the support is just absolutely phenomenal, and I'm touched. I am, and I'm humbled that so many people care so much.
Well, I don't think that it hurts that we've got breaking news that the NSA is, you know, collecting information on everybody in the United States. References to George Orwell's 1984 running rampant. In fact, even the president mentioned 1984 and Big Brother when he was trying to calm everybody down. It's not as bad as you think and all that. So I think that is waking people up to just what our government is doing. And, you know, hopefully that is also helping to generate support for your individual case. Mary, do you know if we've got Adrian on the line?
I do not see if he is. I don't know what number to look for.
Okay. Because I did give him the moderator code. If he used the moderator code, he should be able to talk to us. Adrian Wiley is he's the state chair of the Libertarian Party of Florida, and he's the one.
Yes, sir.
He's the guy that has gotten so much instantaneous support that he had to organize a rally, just had a place for everybody to go to. So, Mary, do you have the ability to see people raise their hand or something?
No, I don't. But I can put them in a queue, a question and answer queue, if they want. It's okay with the sheriff to answer questions. But we have a couple of questions from a couple of moderators.
Okay, why don't you ask the questions from the moderators?
No, Todd and Terry can ask.
Sheriff, Sheriff, this is Todd McGreevy in Iowa, and thank you for standing up. My home state, actually. I grew up just south of Des Moines in a little town called Carlisle, Iowa.
Oh, wow. Okay, excellent.
Well, I live in Bettendorf, Sheriff, in the Quad City.
Excellent.
And yet, that's actually, and I said, you know, I'm curious, how long have you lived in Liberty County prior to this?
I moved to Florida in 1995 and settled in Liberty County in 96 when I met my wife. My wife is originally from here, so.
Excellent. So you've been there a while.
18 years, something like
that. Absolutely. And you, wasn't able to catch it. Who was your attorney again from Tallahassee?
Jimmy Judkins.
Judkins.
Yes.
Excellent. And you've got an arraignment coming up on July 10th. And
again, I'm a man of very little means. I mean, prior to being elected sheriff, I work for the state of Florida, make $45,000 a year. So, you know, I'm not a rich man. And I'm told that the funds that go to the legal defense fund that cannot be used to pay any of my household bills. So now I'm stuck with trying to figure out how I do that as well. So, but my attorney did tell me today that anybody can give me money to help support my family financial situation if that's what they choose to do.
Two things come to mind, Sheriff, real quick. It's fascinating that as an elected official by the people of the county, somebody else can suspend you. That's, I think, fascinating and should be dealt with in its own accord. Secondly, do you have a mechanism? Do you have a website or somewhere where people can donate directly to you? Has anybody offered to help you put that together?
I don't have a website. I do have a personal PayPal account, but I mean, I'm sure that I could publish and let people
Todd, maybe we could put something on the county sheriff project site for him.
Yeah, we should talk offline on that, Sheriff, and get you a link there for people to donate so you can go somewhere to help you during this, which I just find fascinating that the action that was taken was a warrant for your arrest. I want, is there paperwork that says you're suspended? Is that somewhere people can look at?
I have the suspension paperwork from the governor. I can
All right.
And it clearly says without pay, so.
Fascinating. Who knew that the governor could suspend an elected official in the county? That's fascinating. Who is running the sheriff's office now?
The governor has appointed an active Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigator. He's a special agent in charge in Pensacola. His name is Carl Causey. And the governor has appointed him as a temporary, which I find interesting, as a temporary, he's the interim sheriff until this mess gets resolved again. It's a
amazing situation.
Consequently, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement are the very agency that's investigating it. So.
Yeah.
You figure that one out. I haven't been able to figure that one out yet.
Well, were you aware there was such an agency before this happened?
The Florida Department of Law Enforcement?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, they were
pretty standard.
They were. I believe they were an offshoot of the state police, and they turned into an investigative agency, and now they're strictly an investigative agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gary, do you have a question?
Well, I have a number of questions. I don't know what exactly Sheriff Finch. This is Terry Dodd. I'm in Parker, Colorado, by the way. Got a sister that lives not too far from you down there in Florida. Your situation is going to impact a lot of people across the country, and I'm sure you recognize that these folks are setting a precedent. In a situation where they've got a governor that they're able to get to take this kind of action, and it's very possible that there's outside influences that are going on that are encouraging them to prosecute you, so that any other governors and across the country might follow the lead to take action against sheriffs, whether or not they have constitutional authority to do that. Or not, and you're sitting in a very, very important situation that could impact a lot of people, and I'm sure you see that, but I think it's important for the listeners on this call and on our show. We're simulcasting with our normal Thursday night Walls in Our Mind show tonight. I'm kind of curious, Sheriff, about what kind of reaction you're getting from folks in your county, from your constituents. Can you give us a little bit of a read on the kind of reaction you're getting?
I was elected with 52% of the vote. I think it's probably just my wife has a Facebook account. She has probably over 800 friends, and I there's some that are for and some that are against, but I feel like the majority of the folks are in my corner thinking that, you know, what has happened is absolutely ridiculous. In fact, this public relations firm, I think, is going to start going about the task of trying to get some polling going to see what the flavor of the county is. But I think that there's, I feel like at least I feel like there's more that are for me than that there are against me. That's just the feeling that I'm getting.
Well, you know, out here in Colorado, we've got 55 of our 62 sheriffs that have filed lawsuits regarding the anti-gun legislation that's been passed out here. And they're getting letters from their constituents, I would say 20-fold in support of them filing that lawsuit against one out of 20 letters that is questioning that action. So, I mean, that's a huge amount of support. And I'd like to believe that there's a lot of folks in Florida that feel the same way about the attacks that are going on against our Bill of Rights, reserved inalienable rights, and that this is certainly a part of that attack. And I guess, I'm just wondering if you're getting an idea that maybe there is some outside influence going on here?
You know, I have said from just myself that something doesn't, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. For them to do what they have done makes no sense. It's unheard of. It's never happened to anybody's knowledge, even to my son's knowledge. It's never happened to the state of Florida before.
Do you know of any action like this that's been taken by any governor, either in Florida or any other state, for that matter, against a local county sheriff?
I have not heard of any myself.
So this is certainly new ground. It's certainly we're in a situation that hasn't happened before, that, as far as I know of.
Yeah, my attorney's been around for quite some time, and he's never heard of it either. I mean, it's really kind of unheard of.
Sheriff, how long have you been in office?
I took office on January 1st at 1 minute after midnight.
This year, okay, gotcha.
This year, yes, sir.
All right.
Well, it should be interesting to note that the current White House administration is substantially anti-gun, and that the United Nations Small Arms Treaty is going for a vote in the Senate, as we speak. So there's been a major push, and I don't think it's a stretch of anybody's imagination to think that they're going to try to make an example of somebody. And again, I think that it's incredibly poetic that they challenge somebody in Liberty County. Sheriff, do you happen to have the governor's address or fax number? Where can your supporters write letters to the governor, letting him know that we're not completely happy with his actions?
That information, I'm sure, is on my support page. I have a let me find it here. I have a Facebook support page. It's called, if my computer will come up here, it's called Support for Liberty County Sheriff Nick Finch. And right now, this page was brought up about 3 days ago, and right now I'm at 4,403 likes on it. And there's information on there that has it. And if anybody can't find it on there, if they'll just private message me, I'll get it to them. But I'm sure I've seen it on here. I'm sure people have posted it on here. Just for me to find it right from the get-go is going to be a little difficult for me.
Well, anybody with any computer savvy would be able to do a search for Governor Rick Scott, and I'm sure they could probably find his address. And we would ask that people write respectful letters. You're not going to encourage anybody to change their mind by being abrasive and abusive. So please be very respectful and polite if you write Governor Rick Scott a letter. But, the more letters that he gets explaining that, we support Sheriff Finch and want a lot more sheriffs like him, then we can let the administration know that we're not going to stand by and let them just, terrorize the people who are protecting our life, liberty, and property. So,
I have an address here, Executive Office of Governor Rick Scott. It's 400 South Monroe Street. That's Tallahassee, Florida. 32399. There's a phone number here, area code 850-488-7146. And let me see if I can find this email address for you. I'm looking. I'm looking here.
Michael, would you like for me to add James Wright? You were going to have him say something?
Yeah, if he's on the call, you can patch him in.
Okay.
I'm here, Mary.
Okay.
Welcome, James.
Thank you, Michael. You want me to go ahead, or do you want me to...
Yeah, why don't you go ahead while the sheriff is looking up that email address.
Okay, well, Sheriff Finch, I'm in Texas, and we've got a lot of our Texas people on the call tonight, too. Just want you to know that we're supporting you and thinking about you. Quite a few people calling me, asking me what we can do to help. And some of the things that we are doing here, and we've had a similar situation, certainly not to the extent that you are in right there, but we've had some people try to, obviously there's been numerous states where representatives have introduced legislation into their states to try to remove all sheriffs from office when they take a stand on unconstitutional gun laws. And so we had a similar situation happen in our state legislature just recently. And we have been trying to get people in the state to understand that they have a greater voice than simply, you know, electing public officials and then completely being quiet from that point on. And so we've been having assemblies here where we're trying to do things in a very, a simple but parliamentary way. And under the 10th Amendment, you know, it states that all the powers not delegated to the federal government are reserved to the states or to the people. And so we've been studying what powers were reserved to the people. And that's what's been lost in our country. And as you're probably becoming aware, we've been aware that there's a battle going on in our country over a law right now. There's civil law where you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. And the old way that we were founded on in the common law was you're innocent until you're proven guilty by your adversary. And so we had a situation recently where one of our representatives was trying to get legislation to remove sheriffs like they're doing in Colorado. And so we've been dealing as an assembly of people, notifying her that's not within her enumerated powers. In other words, the sheriff works for the people. His oath is to the people. And so some of the things that, and I've sent a copy of our notice we sent out to her explaining how things ought to be in our country. And one of the things we found out about the office of the sheriff is even though it's my contention in particular that the sheriff's office was created long before the United States of America. It's thousands of years old. And therefore, if you look at the Constitution, this office of the sheriff was not created by the Constitution. And it's our contention that the Office of the Sheriff actually exists with we the people, or as some people call it, the fourth branch of government. And in looking in Texas law, we found that the sheriff was also commissioned by the governor, and we've been trying to, this is seemingly what you're caught in right now, that, and the conclusion we've come to here in Texas is the sheriff, when you're elected, it's like that's the people's offer for you to take that job. When you take your oath, that's your acceptance. And then the Constitution is the agreement between the people and yourself. And like you said, you have sworn your oath to uphold that agreement and to keep it. And so in that regard, you're over here completely with the people, not within the three branches of government. However, like in Texas, and I'm sure it's the same way in Florida, you're commissioned by the governor, which is what gives you the power to enforce state and federal law. But as we're coming to realize, the Constitution is supreme over state and federal law, and if it comes in conflict, the Bill of Rights is to be
muted,
held, and the others are to be nullified. They're null and void if they're in conflict. And so what we're trying to do here as people in Texas is trying to support our sheriffs by holding some meetings and doing things very orderly and the way they've always been. I'm talking about historically, the way they were done way back in the 1700s, 1800s, of solving conflicts.
Unmuted.
But we would like to, you know, if we can show, provide you with anything to help people there get behind you in your local community, if you have some contact people there that want to help and don't know what to do, that's sort of what we've been studying. And I don't know if you could share maybe a local contact person who's interested with Michael, who wants to help but doesn't know what to do, and maybe we could share some things we're doing here where they could take some formal ways to get behind you, you know, that would have a lot more weight.
I guess
we have.
I don't know anybody that would pick up that mantle. I know that there's a constitutional lady named Chris Ann Hall. I'm sure that some of you have probably heard of her. I've been in contact with her as well. I don't know if that's something that she would. I know she's busy as well, so I guess the answer to your question is I don't know anybody at this point.
Well, we can get people at the rally tomorrow and maybe ask them. Mary, has Adrian joined the call now?
Yes, I'm on the call now.
Okay.
Excellent. Adrian, welcome. This is Adrian Wiley, and he's the one that is coordinating the rally tomorrow. Adrian, can you give us kind of a schedule? Who's going to be speaking? What you've got so far?
Yes, the rally starts at 11 o'clock.
Muted.
Have a speaker lineup, including Paul Henry, who's a Liberty lobbyist in Tallahassee. We're going to have Bill Walsifer, who is a member of the Libertarian Party of Florida Executive Committee, speaking on behalf of the Libertarian Party of Florida. Alex Snicker is going to be the MC for the event. Danielle Alexandra, who's also with the Libertarian Party of Florida, is going to be reading a statement from the National Constitutional Sheriffs Association. Chris Hall will be actually speaking and reading a statement from Chris Ann, who couldn't be there. I'll be speaking, and, of course, Sheriff Finch will be the featured speaker or guest of honor, and he'll speak last. And the only other slot after that is I have invited Governor Rick Scott to come out and speak to us and explain his actions. I do not know whether he will take us up on that or whether he'll just send out someone with a statement. But we are going to be rallying right outside his office, so I'm sure he will hear us.
Excellent, excellent. Do you have any feel for how many people are planning to be there already?
We have 250 people approximately who have confirmed just through our events page alone. And this thing has taken on an organic life of its own. So word is spreading all around the state. I was just in an event in Orlando, and several people were talking about it there, a few of which from at this event were planning on attending. So the word has definitely spread statewide. So we're expecting the turnout, I would say, to be at least a couple hundred people and could be considerably larger than that.
So the governor's kind of thrown down a gauntlet here, and patriots in Florida are picking up that gauntlet, and we're going to stand in the gap.
Exactly, and people are outraged. In fact, the meeting I was at tonight was the Campaign for Liberty meeting, and before I even spoke on the subject, they were already talking about what happened to you, Sheriff Finch, and how outraged they are about it. So word is just spreading like wildfire across the state.
Well, I want to give people my website. My website is constitutionpreservation.org, constitutionpreservation.org. I've already written an article about Sheriff Finch's situation as soon as I learned about it, and I am more than happy to keep an update as to what is going on. So I will remain in touch with Sheriff Finch. I will try to keep my website updated so that anybody wants to know, what the latest thing is. And again, the purpose of this particular call is to give Sheriff Finch as much support as we possibly can, and to make sure that the supreme law of the land is respected all over. And maybe after the sheriff is victorious in his legal challenge, we can organize a big 4th of July picnic or something down in Liberty County. Would that be okay with you, Sheriff?
Absolutely. Oh, that'd be fantastic. And let me just tell you real quick, Michael, I just emailed you a link. I can't find the governor's email address. All I can find is a web page. I emailed you that link, and I guess that's the only way you can email the governor.
Okay.
But I have emailed you that link, so maybe you can post it on. And I will I'll post that link on my support page on my Facebook. And,
okay. Adrian, did you have any questions for the sheriff before we close this conference call?
No, just very much looking forward to seeing him tomorrow. And, Sheriff, did you have any questions for me about the rally tomorrow?
No, sir. I think I'm ready to go. I went and met with my attorney today, and I've got to, in fact, you missed it, which I read down the statement in the beginning of the conference call that I'm going to make tomorrow, and I guess you'll just have to wait to hear it tomorrow now.
Well, see, that's good, because it'll be a surprise to me. And I do apologize for getting up late on the call. The meeting I was in ran longer than I expected. But, we're really looking forward to it. We've got arrangements with a vendor for podium PA system. We're going to be all set to go and make sure that the governor definitely hears from a lot of his constituents.
I hope the court guard is fine.
Sheriff, would you like to have some questions from the callers?
I think at this point, I think we've probably answered just about everything I can right now. I mean, I've got to be very careful again. I mean, since I am under criminal charges, I've got to be very careful what I talk about, and I don't want to violate the trust of my attorney. And I told him I would
I would try to stay away from those questions. If they've got, you know, if they've got personal questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But if it's anything to do with,
well, they might have some suggestions. You never know.
Mary, this is Todd. I do have one question, Sheriff, for you, real quick. I'm reading the arrest warrant that somebody provided to me, and the very last page asked that the you be brought before this judge, Jonathan Soestrom. Were you, when you were arrested, were you brought before this judge?
No, sir. I was arrested and immediately released on my own recognizance.
So you never actually appeared personally in front of this judge who signed this arrest warrant?
No, I did not.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Terry, Dodd, did you have any last-minute questions? Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for attending this conference call. We will very likely have others. I will take it upon myself to be a focal point for information on my website. Again, that website is constitutionalpreservation.org. Sheriff, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your story with us. And yes.
Terry is, if I can find him, he is. He wants to ask a question.
Okay.
Okay.
She's got to unmute him.
Find his number and.
Yeah. So where's the rally again tomorrow? So Tallahassee at the
Tallahassee in the courtyard between the old Capitol building and the new Capitol building. I believe the actual physical address is 400 Monroe Street. But right between the old Capitol, which is like a four-story columned building, and the new Capitol, which is just a high-rise basically. There's a courtyard approximately the size of a football field. So having 200 plus people on that will make for a very nice crowd.
Excellent.
Well, I think that concludes tonight's conference call.
Well, gentlemen, we have broken away from that simulcast. I believe we were the sheriff was rather limited in what he could say. Red, you and Dr. J. Edward Weed III have live mics, and since they did not open us up with a prayer tonight for Walls in Our Minds, I believe that it would be appropriate for us to do so at this time. Edward, you've got about a couple of minutes before you need to go take care of your son. And if you're there, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
How about opening us with a prayer? Then you can go take care of your youngster, and then we'll get started when you come back.
All right. Our Father Yahweh, we call upon you tonight, and we thank you for your truth. We thank you for the freedom you provide. We know that you are the one who provides more freedom than any man or any constitution. But we thank you for the men that you brought to this continent. And we thank you for the constitution which they formed. And we pray, our Father Yahweh God, in your holy name, that you will hear us as you say you want us to recognize you as the God that hears and answers prayer, the true and living God, and we ask that you hear and answer our prayer, that you would raise up men across this nation and women across this nation that would stand for that Constitution, that would defend it, as this sheriff from Florida has done, and that you would give us the strength to be bold and to be brave and to do what you would have us to do. And we know, Father, that that this Constitution, which we have in America, was established upon your holy law, and we know that you have no problem with us possessing weapons, and we pray that people would hear that and know that, and we pray that they would understand that you said if we did not have something to sell something we owned and to buy a sword that we could defend ourselves with, and of course the sword was the weapon of the day. So we pray, Father, that you'd bless us in the fight that we have, that you'd give us boldness and you give us understanding, give us wisdom to know how to fight, and give us strength spiritually, mentally, and physically, that we'd be prepared for what we must face. And we ask these things as humbly as we know how, our Father Yahweh God, and in the name of Jesus Christ we ask these things. So be it, and amen.
Well, thank you, Edward, and we'll see you in a few minutes. Red, do you have a live mic?
I'm here.
Hello. Well, good evening, sir. I just want to welcome all of our listeners to Walls in Our Minds. We didn't get a chance to do that at the opening of the show. And, you know, it's an interesting situation that sheriff is in down there. They've also managed to trump up a sexual harassment charge against him, which, of course, wasn't talked about in this call. But you've talked before on Walls about, you know, when they've tried to set you up and how you always traveled with your wife because of that. And it's certainly something they try to do. And, I'm hearing even today that there's been a lot of talk about the possibility of John Roberts being blackmailed as a result of NSA tapping of hacking his emails, and that was his family, they threatened to use compromising emails against him and threatened to destroy his family, and that's why he made the decision he did regarding Obamacare. And now I saw an article this morning. This has been suggested that was a possibility, but now I'm hearing there was one article, I think it was on Before's News, John Rolls put it out, that in fact he got inside information that there is a whistleblower out there that has documentation proving that, and that was specifically what Glenn Beck was talking about yesterday. And of course, Alex Jones of Natural News have reported similar suspicions earlier in the week, but now they're saying that there is someone who is actually ready to blow the whistle and provide documentation of that. So these guys are playing a criminal type game that you know you would only expect from mobsters, and that is precisely the kind of action that we're seeing. They're ignoring constituents. They don't care what the law is, whether it's they have a constitutional right to do something or not. They're taking law into their own hands. And I question whether or not this governor, this Rick Scott, had the constitutional authority to do this. And they certainly did not go through any due process. If that sheriff has any Fifth Amendment rights where he should have been brought up on a presentment or an indictment by a grand jury, that did not happen in this case. And this governor went to some judge and said, "Here, I want you to do this," and they just did it. And I question whether or not they had any written legal authority to do this. Perhaps something in the statutes, but certainly not a constitutional delegated authority. Knowledge or feeling about that, Red?
No, you're talking about things that I haven't been aware of. Talking about John Roberts and such. I'm not on that internet that much, and I'm just my age bracket, we aren't into all that stuff, and we're just living in an age, 60, 70 years ago. That's the world we think about, and we're just not up to speed with what's happening in this country. It's a very exciting time. I'm just glad I'm still around because, I see, the world, that these, oligarchs and such have tried to, put together, I think it's falling apart. I think it's coming unglued. And we've always pretty well held on this program that they're satanic, and their god, Lucifer, is the god of confusion. And I think we have the evidence of that that is coming out in full view of the American people at this time. And I'm thrilled to death by what's happening. I think this thing in with your sheriff in Florida, I think that's going to come out very well. I think it's going to come out in our favor. We're not losing the battle now. We have been gaining, and they on the other side are losing. And so I think we've got reason to be very optimistic and very excited. And so I'll turn it back to you.
Well, Edward, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, how much of that were you able to glean from that discussion with the sheriff down there in Florida?
I got a pretty good bit, and I was aware of his situation prior to that. I'd like to discuss that. I'd like to discuss this a little ways, at least into this into our second hour, if not for the remainder of the second hour, because there's a few things that I want to point out. One, legally, I don't know what the Florida Constitution says. I'll try to address the question that you just asked, Mr. Beckman, with semi-intelligence, because I don't, like I said, know what the Florida Constitution says, how it reads. But the highest ranking official in a said county is the sheriff of that county, because he is the directly elected official in that county. So no state troopers, no unelected state troopers or unelected federal government troops or federal government, you know, officers have authority in the county where a sheriff is elected if it is not given to them by the elected sheriff. He is the highest ranking official, law official in said county. And I don't think that varies from state to state. Now, that's my understanding. But one thing that I think is a problem is the interpretation of the Bill of Rights Second Amendment. And here's the several arguments that one, the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. One, I don't guess they understand or seem to care that apparently they don't recognize or give any attention to that word shall not be infringed. And if you look up the term infringed, that word means shall not be violated, shall not be breached, shall not be broken, shall not be transgressed. It's very clear. Their argument would be to us, well, what is a militia? You know, what is a militia? Well, I think that's something that most politicians that I've been aware of have failed to address, or most people that have dealt with this question have failed to address, because often the number one argument is a well-regulated militia is the point there, and we don't have any militias. But the definition of a militia, if you look at the Universal Self-Pronouncing Dictionary from 1933, it says a militia is a group of citizens who are established or enrolled for the internal defense of the state in which they live. So a well-regulated militia, it's necessary, it could be necessary at any point and any time that a well-regulated militia exist in said state for protection of said state. So the argument that disregarded a well-regulated militia doesn't hold a lot of water, and that's a 1933 interpretation there, or a translation of that word, meaning of that word. If you look a little bit more to modern times, The Oxford American College Dictionary of 2002 says a well-regulated militia is a military force of civilians to supplement regular army and protection of states in case of an emergency. Well, if we can't stay armed, if law-abiding legal citizens, and that's what the definition of the word means, militia, if we can't stay armed, then we can't be an effective militia. And we can't be an effective protection of our state or of the freedoms of the people who live within this state if we can't stay armed. And as I was speaking up a while ago, the scripture is pretty plain of what it says about gun control. As I said, that's Luke chapter 22, verse 36 that I quoted, where Yeshua in the, you know, Jesus Christ in the flesh body there, Yahweh in the flesh body, stated that if we didn't have a sword, which was the weapon of the day, they didn't have guns then we need to sell something we owned and get a sword so that we could defend ourselves and we could defend our families. We were also given, of course, a command in the scriptures to occupy until Christ returns to this earth. I don't see how we can do that effectively if we do not have a means of protecting and defending ourselves. And one thing I think you were leading into it, Mr. Dodd, I believe tonight, that I don't think they addressed well enough on their show, not criticizing anyway, you know, and trying to sound arrogant. I'm saying, I think you were trying to lead in with one of your questions, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, as to who is behind what was happening, you know, to this sheriff in Florida and what had taken place. The Jews are heavily behind gun control, and I can discuss some of those things and point out some of those things with some things that we're going to, you know, that I was going to talk about with you, if that was all right. But I think that's what you were pushing them to try to come out with, is saying, look, who is behind this? Do you have any inkling and understanding of who might be behind this above and beyond the governor of the state of Florida? Is that correct? I kind of felt like that was where you were trying to lead him with the question.
Absolutely. I was trying to get him to acknowledge, for one, that his constituents were supporting him in this and that the people in the county were not the ones wanting this, but rather outside influences. And that outside influence actually starts at the state level. Because,
right.
I mean, state officers do not have police power within a county unless
right.
someone violates a state law on state property or, you know, you can't walk in there and have police power without going through that sheriff. Also, due process requires that they go to a judge, and that judge issues a bill of indictment to a grand jury, and that grand jury has to then say, yes, there's probable cause for the issuance of the indictment, and then they can have him arrested or charged. But for them to do it the way that they did it, I don't believe they had constitutional authority or jurisdiction over the
No.
sheriff. Now, let's
No.
let's back up for a minute. What was this about? This was. I think that they can go back, and there's potential charges that can be filed against his subordinate, the officer that apparently reported him to somebody because he trumped him when he let that fellow off for the concealed weapon charge that was filed against the guy that was erased from the record, and that is what the misconduct accusation was. By
right.
this other officer and by the governor, and that was that they erased a charge off of an official record, which really was the sheriff's prerogative. But let's back up for a minute. That fellow was stopped on a traffic violation.
Right.
If that officer that stopped him had probable cause, it must mean he saw the weapon. Well, how could he have seen the weapon if it was concealed? Does Florida law says you can't carry a weapon in your car? Most states, and I don't know what the law there is, I'm just throwing this out, but in the state of Colorado, for example, certain municipalities have laws that say you can carry a weapon in your vehicle as long as you don't have a bullet in the chamber.
Right.
Well, there's no discussion about any of that here, but let's come back to this probable cause. I believe
right.
they ignored probable cause because you can't search a fellow's vehicle just because he violated a traffic law. You know, if he was speeding or he went through a stop sign or whatever, you don't have the right to search his vehicle for that unless you have probable cause. And probable cause would have been visually seeing the weapon. And if you could visually see that weapon, then it wasn't concealed. So I believe that this whole thing has got a setup going on here, and I don't believe that they followed due process. And I agree with Red that this ought to come out in the right way. But, hey, if he acknowledges jurisdiction, if he's represented by a member of the bar, a stinking attorney, and that attorney does not even assert his Fifth Amendment rights, which he probably will not do, and I'm not talking about remaining silent. The Fifth Amendment requires that an infamous crime like this requires an indictment or a presentment from a grand jury. And it would have to be a grand jury seated in the jurisdiction that the crime was committed in, which means it would have to be a county grand jury. So
right.
they are totally violating the Constitution in my mind. And they're doing it to the top law enforcement officer, which is exactly what they want. They want to set up a county constitutional sheriff and show and set a precedence that you take a liberal stinking governor and he can go out there and assert himself within a county totally outside the Constitution. And if they set this precedent, we're going to be seeing this fought all across the country.
I think it'll lead to civil war, probably, Mr. Dodd. And what I think that the people need to understand, because, and I'm not insulting anyone, but Americans have been so dumbed down. They're unaware of the Constitution, many of them. Many of them are very aware of their rights and their constitutional rights and the founding fathers, but many of them are not. And I think we need to stress here that defending yourself is a biblical right, as we've discussed. Defending yourself is a constitutional right, which our forefathers established as the highest law of the land, right from the beginning, that we have the right to keep and bear arms and to protect our property and to protect our person with that arms, you know, with those arms if necessary. And I think it's very important that people understand. I'm not sure. Let me put this out. Let me see what you, let me see if your spirit agrees with this. I have wondered since I first heard about this issue if this man who had committed this, and I may be wrong, but if this man had committed this, that committed this traffic violation, was not a plant in the first place. And what I mean by that is if you go back, in order to destroy constitutional government, if you go back to where I'm from in the state of Alabama in the 1960s, before they integrated the school systems, you have Rosa Parks get on a bus in Alabama. She doesn't want to sit where state law says she's supposed to sit, okay, and where the people of that state have voted to have those laws put in, so she goes and sits where she wants to. She was trained in communist schools in Tennessee for the purpose of violating state law and destroying state rights to establish, you know, because what is not given in the authority of the Constitution to the federal government is there reserved for the people and each state to vote and decide on the things. This seems to me like another one of those instances, and you can tell me what you think. You may think I'm crazy, but this seems to me like another one of those instances where somebody may have very well been a plant to destroy another constitutional right of the people to take one step further toward tyranny. I think that's the goal that they were shooting for in this issue. I don't think that Rosa Parks was a tired seamstress. Again, there's absolute proof that she was trained in the communist folk schools there in Tennessee. There's pictures of her being trained there. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor, wrote checks, and the FBI still have copies of those canceled checks that she wrote to that folk school, which they claim doesn't exist now. They claim that folk school never existed. But the FBI, under J. Edgar Hoover, had photocopies of the checks that she wrote, that she signed with her name on them, written to the support of that communist folk school. And so that's a fact. And I think this may just be another one of those situations where they deliberately, you know, where they deliberately were working to try to destroy constitutional law, and this is the first step that they were planning on taking to do so. What do you think?
Well, having a little bit more information would lead me to believe that that officer, and I had this in my mind anyway, that that officer is somewhat of a plant. And probably he's not the only plant out there. And this is a good warning for the rest of the sheriffs out there. Beware that your subordinates may be working for somebody outside your department.
Right.
And in this case, I believe that this sheriff was aware of who this citizen was, came into the station, observed that this citizen was being written up, and went over and inquired as to what was going on. And when he found out what his deputy had done or was doing, he said, no, we don't need to go here. And right. So, you know, getting the facts of the situation, he made a determination that that guy should have never been charged and
right.
decided to release him, which was his prerogative. So I don't
let's make it clear why it was his prerogative. It was his prerogative because, really, even I'll go a step farther than that. It wasn't even his prerogative. Under his oath as a sheriff to protect the United States Constitution, it was his duty to turn that man loose because we have a right to keep and bear arms, and the man had a permit to carry the weapon that he was carrying. Is that correct?
I don't recall whether or not he had a permit. If he did, I don't believe he had it on him. I don't think that the officer would have necessarily arrested him had he produced a concealed carry permit. But, see, you don't need a concealed carry permit in most situations unless it's a particular municipal code to
exactly.
carry a gun in your car. Most states allow you to carry that weapon in your car as long as it's not, you know, it doesn't have a bullet in the chamber.
Right.
So, and again, regardless, it would have come back to probable cause. I mean, if he had no right to search the man's car unless he had probable cause, and the only way that he would have had probable cause is if he saw the weapon. Well, if he saw it, then it's not concealed unless
exactly.
the guy got out of the car and had it stuffed in his pants or something like another fellow that, you know, that did have that happen. And that fellow did happen to have a concealed carry permit, but it didn't stop that deputy from planting his hands on the car and handcuffing him.
Right.
And taking his weapon. Well, the guy knew his rights, and he started immediately questioning him. But in this case, I don't think that was the case. I think this deputy did an illegal search and then filed charges on the guy, and perhaps the guy broke no law at all. And I think that's what the sheriff said. He said that he felt that it was his duty constitutionally to release this guy. He did not feel like he had broken the law and thought his deputy was acting outside of his authority. But
it certainly doesn't seem like on either front that he broke the law, because you've got two problems. You've got an illegal search and seizure, as you just pointed out perfectly, and you've got a violation of the man's right to keep and bear an arm. He's not a criminal here. He broke the speed law, but he had no criminal record that prevented him from carrying a weapon. Obviously, or at least that's something right now that certainly has not been indicated by the sheriff or by anybody else involved in the case right now.
I just want to ask one question. If you were a deputy in a sheriff's office and a sheriff told you were acting outside your authority, this guy had not broken a law, Would you go running to somebody at the state level if you didn't have somebody telling you that they would cover you? Because you go around your boss's back, in most cases you're going to be subject to termination.
Exactly.
So I don't buy into the fact that this guy just arbitrarily decides he's going to go to somebody at the state level and get his boss into trouble unless he had been invited to do that or told ahead of time.
Exactly. He had something to gain, I think, from the situation because, again, I mean, if you want to get technical, I mean, the sheriff would have had the authority. It probably should have maybe suspended the officer for a period of time or maybe fired him for an illegal search of the man's car. Wouldn't you agree? Because you could potentially have a lawsuit from this guy who says, look, you had no right to search my car in the first place.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If I was that sheriff and I managed to get past these little hurdles that he's having to go through, that guy's going to be looking for a job.
I can tell you that. That would be for sure. And let me point out something, too, that I want people to understand. And I want people to listen because I don't want people to think that we just point fingers haphazardly. I want to document what we're talking about. To show you who is at least a big portion of who is behind. And I encourage every listener here tonight to do their own research. I never take some, and I don't mean to sound like I don't trust people, but I very rarely ever take someone at face value on what they say. Because I want to prove it. I want to see it with my own eyes. I want to do my own research to know that what somebody's saying to me is the truth. And I expect people to do that with me. I hope that they will. I encourage them to do so because I'm not lying to them. I don't have anything to hide from them. I want them to verify what I'm saying and do it themselves and study for themselves because then they're just another witness to the truth that we're trying to put out here. And the bottom line is, you've got a tremendous push from the Jewish newspapers, and I'm talking about the New York Times and the Washington Post and others. And if you don't believe they're Jewish, that's what I'm challenging you to do. You do the research, and you'll find out who owns them and who's in control of them and what they're presenting and what they're doing. Now they're writing about the gun issues. And they lead you to believe, these papers, these media sources, television, et cetera, and papers and everything, leads you to believe that America has the highest murder rate of just about any country in the world. And that's simply not true. That's simply absolutely not true. As a matter of fact, statistics were taken in 2011, just a couple of years ago, and the U.S. murder rate was less than 5% per 100,000 people. The gun murder rate was lower than that, slightly over 3% per 100,000 people. And if you go in, if you did some studying, most of Eastern Europe, most of Southeast Asia, the Caribbean and Africa, all but one South American nation, Mexico, there was a lot of different ones in Central America, all across the areas there that you look to. They had higher murder rates despite the strict gun control laws that America has. They have higher murder rates than the United States does. But they want you to believe here in this country that we've got one of the worst in the world. And I tell you, one of the ones that's leading the charge is Piers Morgan. Back in 2012, he said, you have by far the worst rate of gun murder and gun crime of any of the civilized countries in the world. First of all, I'd like to point out that Piers Morgan is J.P. Morgan, the Jewish banker's son, Pierpont Morgan. And I'd also like to point out that when he says these things, he's talking about our country, and he's not even a citizen of our country. But he seems to have an awful, because he's said a lot of things in the press. Piers Morgan has said a lot of things in the press about America's right to bear arms. And he talks of us in the third person of our country and our. It's not even his country, but he's out here speaking, running his mouth about mine and your rights and every right of Americans to protect and defend themselves and their family and their property. And the New York Times has written articles. stating that the American murder rate is roughly 15 times that of other wealthy countries, which have much tougher much tougher laws controlling private ownership of guns. That was in the December 17, 2012 issue of the New York Times. But the U.S. homicide rate, like I said, in 2011 was less than 5%, and that's government figures, less than 5% per 100,000. Nowhere near what the New York Times claimed. Nowhere near what they wrote, and that's government statistics that contradict what the New York Times was presented to the people. And the very important thing is here that people know where they're getting their news, and they got to know who's opposed to this. And we've got to be more specific. You take somebody like Glenn Beck or Ann Coulter, these people are very well respected in many circles and are loved by a lot of conservatives. They name most of the same people we're sitting here talking about tonight, Mr. Dodd, Mr. Beckman, but they don't have enough guts to pinpoint down and say, they'll tell you the New York Times is a problem, they'll tell you that CNN's a problem, they'll tell you that Washington Post is a problem, they'll tell you Piers Morgan is a problem, they'll tell you that who's attacking the guns and who's trying to do these things and who's trying to bring about these communistic controls of American society. They just won't tell you they're Jewish. They support everything we're sitting here talking about tonight, except they just won't come out and tell you the whole truth so you really know who's to blame and you really know what's taking shape, and then you really know it's not just these liberal, it's not just a liberal, so we can kind of put a mask on who is really right down to the nitty-gritty involved the most about these issues. They don't want us to know exactly who's involved, because if we knew exactly who was involved, the American people might wake up and do something about it. I mean, the bottom line is, in every single place that guns, all guns, doesn't matter whether they're handguns or whatever they were banned, murder rates have gone up. I can remember back when I was a teenager years ago, and I don't remember what year it was, but it was sometime in the 90s. There was an issue here in Alabama. I don't remember which city it was, but it happened here in Alabama. Somebody could probably look it up. I don't remember the guy's name. I think it was Anniston, Alabama, but don't quote me on that. I think it was Anniston, Alabama, where two criminals with stolen weapons went into a Shoney's, a local restaurant, and they went into a Shoney's, and this was only on local news. It wasn't on national news. This was only on local news, but I remember it very vividly. Because a lot of times we didn't have as much of that kind of stuff going on, or at least it didn't seem like it was reported quite as much back in those days or whatever. And they had gone in and they were holding people hostage and everything. And this one particular guy, like I said, I don't recall his name, but this one particular guy was hiding under one of the tables there, and he was armed when the people came in. And they started threatening people's lives and everything else. And this guy, when he had the opportunity, these guys had their guns drawn and everything else, this guy had the opportunity, he shot them. And all the good people lived and the two bad guys didn't. And you don't hear those stories out there because they're not being reported, because they don't want people to actually realize and believe that there is this kind of situation happening. Because, you know, here I heard the CNN here not too long back was saying that of all the gun massacres that have occurred, that no one who supposedly, you know, had a, you know, arms on them to protect themselves, shot the assailant that committed these massacres. Well, of course they did. That sounds, you know, oh, that sounds so tragic. But here's the cleverness of the Jew and what they do in their papers and how they and on their TV shows. That sounds like, well, you know, that's a good point. Why has nobody ever? Well, obviously, if the guy went ahead and committed the massacre, somebody didn't shoot him before he did. Duh. Obviously, if somebody committed it, they didn't shoot him before it happened. But they're not reporting these issues on a national level. They're not reporting these things on a national level when in many cases, people who have been armed have prevented issues from happening, prevented people from getting killed. They saved lives.
If they weren't being reported on the Internet, we wouldn't even know that they happened at all.
No, never would.
But the fact that they are being reported on the Internet proves your point.
That's what I'm saying. You're getting the only place, and now they're trying to censor the internet because they know that we've used the internet to get a lot of these truths put out there and demonstrate a lot of these truths that otherwise people wouldn't be able to know about. I think it was shortly after the shooting in Colorado out there where you were from. Not exactly. I'm not saying the town you're from, but I'm saying out there in your area where the shooting occurred in the movie theater. It was shortly after that time that a situation happened at a mall where a person who was armed shot somebody before they were able to kill a bunch of people. And like I said, this was not reported on a national issue, on a national level. It was reported by a lot of shortwave radio. It was reported by a lot of internet news sources, independent news sources, but it was not reported on a national level by any of the major news networks. And they don't want you to know about these things because it would bring legitimacy to the argument that we need to be armed, that we have to be armed in order to protect ourselves. And again, this is not an argument to arm the somebody who's mentally ill or unstable. This is an argument to arm legal, law-abiding citizens like me. I'll use me as an example. I ain't even got a ticket on my record. I have no record of any kind. What would prevent me from, I have no history of mental illness. I've never taken anything for any type of medicine for mental illness. Why should I be denied the right to keep and bear arms? I mean, I understand there's cases where that needs to be, and I don't think anybody argues that. Anybody with any sense doesn't argue that position. They argue the right, but that's not the goal of the people who are behind this, and I'm telling you, read what the New York Times has written, read what the Washington Post has written, read what the Jewish news networks are printing and posting and talking about everywhere they go, and you'll see who's the one that's pushing this agenda the hardest. They're the ones that are pushing the hardest to try to take these things on and try to do these things. And like I said, unless it's a local level, occasionally a local newscast will report something, you know, like I said, a little bit about something like what happened, like I said, here in Alabama back when I was, younger. But it's few and far between. And again, it's not heard on a national scale. It's heard just, you know, by, you know, a few thousand people here or there in a smaller community. You know, they don't want people to realize the truth. And that's the, you know, they want us to believe, too, that guns kill people. And people kill people. And it doesn't matter. There was an incident here not too long back where a guy, you know, went into a mall, crashed a car into a mall and took a ball bat out and injured some people. I think killed several people. We're going to outlaw cars. We're going to outlaw ball bats. We're going to outlaw knives, you know. I mean, we can go around and we can eat our steaks with spoons and we can ride horses and we can be armed with nothing and people are still going to commit murder because it's in the heart of the man to do wickedness. It's not the weapon that is the problem. It's the heart of the wicked person that's the problem.
Well,
statistics
are something like 8 to 1. Murders caused by blunt instruments versus guns.
Exactly. Close hand-to-hand situations that spurred up at the spur of the moment. And, well, let me give you an instance. This is a personal story that happened to me many years ago. I had traveled up to Memphis, Tennessee. And I was in a parking garage, and I was surrounded by a gang of thugs that had tried to get in my car. They were trying to get in my car. I had my weapon with me. I didn't even have to fire the weapon. These guys were not armed with guns. They were armed with knives. They were not armed with guns. But when I presented the gun, they scattered because they were honestly afraid I was going to shoot them. And I would have shot them before I would have died. And having the gun, not even using it. I mean, this is just a personal story that I can give of the one time that anything that ever came up in my life that I ever had to having the gun saved my life. I didn't even have to fire it. In that particular instance, it just having it on me very potentially saved my life. And that is my own personal story of protection, but you got to worry about a government that fears its citizens, law-abiding citizens being armed. There's something weird and fishy. I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said that, you know, that, and I'm paraphrasing, but I mean, if the government that, you know, that can't trust its people is a government that can't be trusted, because there's, if they're out here worrying about us, I mean, we're the very people. Of course, recent election results seem to prove that we're not the people who are electing them to office. They're just being fabricated. But we're the people who have put them in office, but yet they seem to be totally scared to death of us and totally want to oppress everything that we have to call our own out here and control every aspect of our lives. A government like that needs to be feared. A government like that is up to no good. There's something wrong with a government wanting to be in every part of your life and wanting to control you. And this is the main issue of that control. If you're unarmed, then you can't protect anything else. You can't defend any other right that the Constitution recognizes was God-given. You can't protect your freedom to worship. You can't protect your state's rights. You can't protect your property. You can't protect any other right that the Constitution recognized as God-given without something to protect yourself with. That's why this is the one right, freedom, that our forefathers said shall not be infringed, period. What these liberal communists apparently don't understand or don't care is they apparently don't recognize that word or don't want to even acknowledge that it's there. And that's what our people have got to unite around. We cannot continue. If this law, we've accepted so much that we never should have accepted, but if this law has changed, like I said, then we lose every way we have of defending ourselves. They can do anything they want to because you can't properly defend yourself. And they criticize the semi-automatic weapons. And I heard one guy say, and I don't even know who he was, but I heard one guy say recently that the semi-automatic, when the forefathers put together the right to keep and bear arms, they weren't taking into account semi-automatic weapons. They didn't know anything about semi-automatic. They were taking into account that when they had to fight for their freedoms against an oppressive, overzealous British government, British monarchy, they had the same exact weapons as the weapons that the British soldiers were using.
Let's get this straight for a second. Let's slow down for a second and get this straight. They fought against their own standing army. Our founders were British citizens. They were British subjects. And that army that they fought against was their own army. And that army fired on them first.
Yes.
So when you get that part of it straight, then you, all of a sudden you realize why the Second Amendment was written.
Exactly.
A free state has to be prepared to take on its own government.
Exactly. A free people has to be armed in order to protect itself from such invasion. And that's what I'm saying. A lot of people seem to think that we were over here in America and that the British just came and attacked our country. We weren't even a country. We were part of the British, that was British colonies that had been established here in the United States, and a lot of people don't know that today. That's what I'm telling you. We're talking to people who don't know these things in many instances. And they were rebelling against that government, their own, like you said, their own army, and they had weapons equivalent to what were of the day. Yeah, it may have taken 15 minutes to load a musket. It may not have been very accurate. But it was the same weapon that the army possessed at that time. And if a citizen of this country has nothing but a little .38 stub-nosed pistol and they're going up against somebody who has an AR-15 rifle that shoots fully automatic weapon, you know, rounds, their chances of survival is nothing. We've got to be armed to the equivalent of the potential of an invading army, but even more so of our own army that would turn on us. And I don't think that most of our own military men would turn upon us, but doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what, you know, might happen, you've got to be prepared for that, and that's what our forefathers, like you said, had established, because they had faced that with their own countrymen and their own army firing upon them. Their own countrymen being willing to kill them before they would allow them to be free. And that's the situation. And I think we've got an idiot in office that is more than willing to kill us before he will let us be free.
Well, I just pulled up Chuck Baldwin's article on Line in the Sand, and I was looking for his quote. I know there was some stuff at the bottom of it, but basically what Chuck said, and he was addressing specifically the issue you're just talking about, he basically says that he's not going to give up his semi-automatic rifle, his AR, and he basically says that if we give up he says, make no mistake about it, it is not just semi-automatic rifles that these gun grabbers are after. Ultimately, they want to take all of your guns. We either stop them now or there will be no stopping them at all. And he says, there's no hyperbole to say that this attempt by people such as Barack Obama and Dianne Feinstein to make outlaws out of law-abiding citizens for simply exercising our right to keep and bear arms is the most important political battle of our lifetimes. And he made the comment about that if they take our semi-automatic rifles, they've taken it, because that's the only thing we've got right now in our hands that would possibly stand up against the type of firepower that the military has, the standing army has. And we don't want to fight our army. We want our army to fight for us, and I believe that a good portion of them will. But at the same time, there's also an awful lot of knuckleheads up there that will just follow orders no matter who's giving them. It could be Hitler giving them the orders, and they would follow it. The thing that I think is important to point out here, and I pointed this out in a speech that I gave on the Capitol steps in Denver just a few months ago, and that is that if you give up your arms, if you surrender your weapons, in essence, you are surrendering God from the top of the pecking order. Because the only way that we can defend our unalienable rights, the only way we can defend the Constitution and God at the top of the pecking order society is to remain armed against this tyranny. Now, we've only got about 17 minutes left. Do we want to try to get into what Red wanted to talk about tonight or not? Because I think this is a good segue point of doing just that. I believe it's important for us for people to understand that everybody that's pushing these things have sold out. They have accepted Satan's terms that were made, same terms that were turned down by Christ in the desert. And I believe that if we don't take it to that point, then we're missing an opportunity. But we've only got about 15 minutes, so we don't have a lot of time to talk about that. Red, do you want to jump in?
I want to jump in. Of course, I am a veteran, and I took that oath when I went into the military, as have over 30 million more Americans in this country that have taken the same oath. And we really don't think about it, but we swore to uphold and defend the Constitution. We did not swear to uphold and defend the government. You see, we swore to defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so if at any point the government you see, if they are attacking our Constitution, then they have become a domestic enemy, and we, the veterans of this country, have a responsibility to bring them back under the Constitution. Now, I have a friend that was in Russia right shortly after the collapse of the USSR. And there was a couple of military units, and I don't remember exactly what they were, but they had a confrontation right in Moscow. And the one group, of course, was they apparently had a commanding officer that had been part of the old establishment and such, and his men were willing to take orders from him. And then the other unit was people who were all in favor of trashing the USSR. There were no shots fired. But the same thing is going to happen right here in this United States of America. We've got a lot of people out there that are putting a lot of garbage on the emails and such, where they're just doing everything they can to generate fear. And I find that to be, I suspicion that it is the agent provocateurs that are doing this. And because I know a lot of veterans, and I'll tell you, I don't know a single veteran out there. I have not met one that would defend this government, because of what is going on and the awareness that everybody has of how dishonest and how bad this government has become. And of course, then there was one email here in the last few days about we had to worry about Russia, Russia would be defending our government here, come over here and assist our government. That's not the case. If there's something happens, or the Russians would be in here if we asked them to, they'd be in here to help the people on our side of this thing, because every country out there in the face of the earth don't trust the federal government that we have in this country right now. And they wonder how in the world the people of this country could be so brain dead, so brain damaged, that we would allow this to reach the point that it has. Now, I'm going to shift gears here just a little bit, but I want to get this in before we shut down here for this week. We've got to, Terry, you alluded to this just a bit, but we've got to remember what the offer that Lucifer, Satan, made to the Lord Jesus Christ when he came out of the wilderness after 40 days of fasting and prayer in the wilderness. He came out of the wilderness, and the first encounter he had with anybody was with old Satan himself. And Satan took him up on a high mountain and showed him the kingdoms of the earth. And then he made Christ an offer. And he said, "You see all those kingdoms? I will give them to you, all of them, if you will bow down and serve me." Now, Satan didn't find, Christ didn't accept that offer. Satan lost that one. But he has been making that offer to people down through the ages. And, of course, we have a religion today. In our world today, we've got the Muslims, they pray to Allah. We've got the Buddhists, they pray to Buddha. The Japanese pray to the emperor, that's Shintoism. And we, the Christians, we have an access to our Creator God through the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, the question is, Ed is talking a great deal about the Jews. And, of course, I'm of the opinion that a Jew is someone that, you know, someone that belongs to the Methodist Church. We think of them as being a Methodist. And if they're a Catholic, why we think of them as being a Catholic. But in the religion called Judaism, who is the God that the people of that religion, who is the God of Judaism? It is the, they are there in Judaism. They're under that offer that Satan offered to Christ. And that's what we're up against. And that's why we're going to win, because our Heavenly Father, in Matthew 24:22, he's telling us how bad it's going to get on planet Earth and before he comes. But then he says, unless the day be shortened, no flesh would be saved. Our Heavenly Father is going to stop any attempt to wipe out the flesh, we the people on planet Earth. We've got the winning, we're on the winning side. Let's not forget that. Let's remember that. Let's be very positive. We don't have to be peddling fear out here. There's so much fear being peddled on that internet. It's just, it's really pathetic. I guess that's why I don't spend as much time on it as I could, because there's so much fear. And when I see it, I know where the source, what the source is. I know that it's government provocateurs. I was telling Terry yesterday how that back in the late 70s, people would say, well, Red, aren't you afraid that they're tapping your phone, that they're getting everything off of your phone? And they were afraid. I said, I hope they're listening to my phone conversations. And that would take them aback, of course, because they would get the opposite answer that they anticipated. I said, all I'm talking on that phone is the truth. And it's the only way I've got to, it's the only opportunity I have to talk to them. And so when they listen to my phone, they're going to get the truth. And so all this conflict going on right now, I think it's appropriate. I think it's proper. I think it's part of Satan's kingdom that is being exposed. These monsters, like the governor down there in Florida, the mayor of New York City, I would dare say Bloomberg is probably putting money in Florida to try to help get our sheriff friend there getting convicted. These people are serving a false god, a small g god, and they're serving him, and they are going to lose. And I hope they're listening. I hope they get this recording and get it loud and clear. So I just, I'm just not all that concerned, because I see where we are winning some major battles. We're having some major things happen, and they're in our favor. So I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Well, I think we're going to have to do another show, Edward, on this particular topic, particularly getting into some of these scriptures. You know, Red, I've been doing a lot of research in the last couple of weeks regarding words like Lord and Christ and Christian and faith and hope and holy. And I've been getting pretty disturbed about what our translators have done to us. It seems that that they have conned us into no longer calling upon the names of the Lord, yet they call upon the names of the, what the scripture refers to as mighty ones, And I think we've got to figure out how to clean up our act. And I know Edward wanted to read the specific scripture tonight of Matthew 4, but I don't think we've got enough time to go there. Do you, Edward?
No, we can catch up there on the next show. I mean, there's a lot of things that I'd like to add to what Mr. Beckman was saying that would point to the people of what we must do in the process to bring about the transformation that we're looking to bring about.
You got 4 minutes.
It's great. Yeah, and that's what I want to do is well, to lead into it, I mean, just briefly, Christ said that we're the light of the world. And if we don't shine that light, and I'd like to get into more detail maybe on the next show that we do about it, then the world's going to be in darkness. Now, I realize that light hurts, you know, people's eyes who are in darkness. But we've got to wake up and realize that the things that we're having happen, we've brought on ourselves by our sin, by our own wickedness. But there is a solution, a biblical solution. Just like Mr. Beckman was talking about, a biblical solution that can bring us out of this wilderness that we've been wandering around in. And maybe we can talk, like you said, maybe we can talk about that on the next show. I apologize. I guess we got bogged down into talking about the Second Amendment too long. That was probably my fault. But there is a biblical solution to our problem. And
I won't, Terry, yes. I won't be available for next week, I don't think. So unless I have to, I'll be on my way to Montana. So I won't be on next week, I'm almost sure.
Well, next week we've got the folks coming on with that have organized the recalls here in Colorado, and I'm supposed to also have one of our constitutional sheriffs, at least one, that may be with us next week. And then the following week, I've got it lined up with one of our state senators that sponsored Sound Money, and hopefully Edwin Vieira will be able to make it on. I haven't gotten confirmation back from him yet, but he told me to set it whenever it was convenient and he'd be here, but I'll be following up with him. But then in 3 weeks from tonight, I'd kind of like to revisit this, Edward.
Okay. We'll do the best we can. My wife is expecting. I hope that I can be a part of that show. We'll see what we can do. I don't know when she'll be doing. She'll be due somewhere around that time. So I probably won't be. I may not be able to be a part of that show. But my apologies for getting bogged down. And like I said, the Second Amendment tonight, I should have been more focused on what we were doing. But it just was going so well, and we was having so much we wanted to bring out. But I apologize for that.
No apology due. Well, shall we call it a night, gentlemen? Or either one of you have a closing comment you'd like to make in 2 minutes?
Be the light of the world and be salty and be obedient. In the ancient translations, text, being obedient was the same as believing. If we say we believe in Yahweh God, then we must obey him. And if we don't obey him, we don't believe in him. Pretty simple.
Well, to that I'll say amen, or make it so. Thank you, gentlemen. Red, if we don't see you next week, please travel safe.
I will try. Lord willing, I'll be back. And we're living in an exciting world at an exciting time. And let's live it to the maximum.
Good night, everyone, and Yahweh bless.
Good night
to you. This dwells in our minds.
Yeah.
Good night, Edward. Good night, Red.
Good night, bye.
Thanks, Dylan.